it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say. Your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the Top Order Podcast, 25th of Jan, 22 here in Auckland, New Zealand. We are in a red traffic light, but we're all together to record this week in cricket. We'll also have another episode coming up in your feed a little later in the week as well. The Hall of Fame back by popular request. But on tonight's This Week in Cricket, we're going to talk West Indies, England, Elise Perry left out of an Australian women's team, India versus South Africa, the Super Smash, the Big Bash, and a whole host more. Stay tuned. Well, guys, where do we want to start? We've got domestic tournaments galore. Bordy, I'll probably come to you for your compatriots in the BBL, and then we'll talk a little bit of Super Smash with Lippy as well. But yeah, what's going on in the BBL? We've had the Eliminator, the Dominator, the
Procrastinator. And then the Money Spinner is the one coming up in preparation for the Grand Final. Three teams remain in the Big Bash. The Adelaide Strikers had a pretty entertaining game, eliminating Shane Bond's Sydney Thunder earlier in the week. Even though he's not coaching them, they're still the Shane Bond-led Sydney Thunder, in my view.
He was bowling in the Black Clash.
There you go. Now the Strikers will move on to play the other Sydney team, that is the Sydney Sixers, on Australia Day in Sydney at the G, that is the SCG, for the right to lose to Perth Scorchers in the final on Friday, January the 28th at Marvel Stadium in Docklands. That's not the MCG, that's the covered one in Melbourne where they play all the AFL. So Perth Scorchers are going to win the Big Bash 11.
Simple as that.
Yeah, simple as that, really. They've been the best team all tournament.
So stick your money on the Strikers or the Sixers.
Yeah. I've said that the Scorchers can't lose, so put all your hard-earned on the Strikers. Look, a couple of controversies in the BBL in recent times. We haven't covered it yet on the podcast, but of course, Stephen Smith, the Australian technician, wasn't able to go back and play for the Sydney Sixers, probably didn't expect to play, but then given that the New Zealand tour was postponed, he wanted to play for the Sydney Sixers in the BBL and was unable to.
Yeah, why was that? I probably didn't follow that story close enough. I kind of just saw him saying, I'm available, and then everyone sort of saying, you can't play, and whining about why he couldn't play. I saw Pat Cummins even trolling the Cricket Australia feed, basically saying, you know, I think they said, who do you want to see in the BBL this week? And he wrote Smithy,
yeah,
which was great.
Raj, can you cue the beep to beep out my swearing?
No worries.
It's an administrative stuff up for Cricket Australia, and
I'm still waiting for the beep.
Oh. I was going to swear, but then I decided against it to keep it G-rated.
You don't need to cue it up anymore. No, he's decided to go PG.
I've gone PG. Administrative stuff up. So, thanks very much. Better late than never.
So you meant fuck up, right?
Yes, I did mean that. Very good. Right.
I hope this is all staying in.
And back onto the podcast. Right. Okay, so COVID happened, right? And all of the...
Oh, tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so all the BBL teams had to get extra players from somewhere. Otherwise, they weren't going to be able to field a side. So guys from club cricket in Melbourne and various other places were being drafted in, and effectively the rules were relaxed to allow a pool of local players to be selected, right? And that was the loosening of the normal eligibility rules.
And some of those players played for more than one team in the competition.
Absolutely, yeah. Played for several clubs. And that was all okay. That was all above board, all tickety-boo. Now, in their foresight, the administrators and the list managers of those clubs didn't put the test managers into that player pool, or the test players, sorry, into that player pool. And so what happened when the tour was cancelled, none of those test players were on the lists for those squads. They weren't contracted players and they weren't in the local player pool. And then Cricket Australia said, well, no, you can't call those players into the squad to play finals cricket. They had to come from the registered player pool, of which Steve Smith, et cetera, weren't a part. Because one, they didn't expect to play in the tournament, and B, they were going to be playing New Zealand anyway. So when all that fell over, no one had done their contingency planning to say, well, actually, why don't we just put their names down on the list anyway, just in case. And lo and behold, it all came to pass that Steve Smith couldn't play in the Big Bash, and there you go.
Well, or the fact that they changed the rules beforehand, they couldn't just change them again.
Well, that would be, to quote Cricket Australia, degrading the integrity of the competition, right, if they were to just allow Steve Smith to appear in the finals, having not played or been eligible to play.
Yeah, so due respect, degrade the integrity of the competition. So nothing against Justin Avendano, but he turned out, I think, for the Melbourne Stars one day, gave his jersey back and then went and played a game for, I think, Sydney in the very next day at a different stadium against the same team that he'd played the day before. So that might not be completely accurate, but listeners, you get the point that we're trying to make.
Yeah, once some player played twice. The other thing that was controversial.
Well, no,
this week.
Avendano was one of the
players. Oh, was he one of the guys? Sorry,
dead set. Okay. But it might not have been that he played for those clubs on those days.
And we're still yet to see Sam Billings come back from the West Indies. He might play or might not yet play.
Yeah, no, he's found the flux capacitor and he's on the way. Yeah.
Okay, excellent. Fantastic. The other thing that caught my eye this week, Glenn Maxwell, that's the Australian superstar number four batsman and off-spin bowler, Glenn Maxwell, not in the best 11 for the tournament. So the tournament team was picked by the eight coaches, and the eight coaches saw fit to add a bunch of guys into the team, including picking two X-Factor reserve players, of which Jason Sanger from Shane Bond's the Sydney Thunder was one. But no room for Maxi, despite hitting a record 154 not out in his last outing, having recovered from COVID and then smashing 154
how
not
was
out,
the,
which was a record.
How was the rest of his tournament, apart from that big 100?
Reasonable, I think. But, I mean, if you hit 154, you probably... and break all sorts of records, both in terms of team score and personal score, I think you're pretty close to being in the team of the tournament. I would have had him in place of maybe Jason Sanger, at least as an X-factor player. I mean, that's what he is, right? But yeah, that one just caught my eye this week. Glenn Maxwell, not the best 13 players in Australia's Big Bash number 11.
We'll hop across the ditch. So Super Smash also coming to a climax. Lippy, the Wellington women have gone pretty well, 10 from 10. So that's, perhaps England can take some lessons from that kind of record. But what else is going on in terms of finals coming up in the Super Smash?
Yeah, so look, Thursday New Zealand time is when the eliminator is, if you want to put it in BBL terms. But there's only three teams. First team goes straight to the final. And you've already mentioned the Blaze straight into the final in the women's comp. I mean, they've just been unbelievable. They've been unbelievable for quite a few years now, and you look up and down their roster, it's just stacked. The Kerr sisters, Sophie Devine, Lee Casper, Maddie Green, they're just, you know, everywhere up and down. It's just white ferns galore and young promising players. So look, it feels, I've said it I think for the last 3 weeks, that they seem unstoppable. I just can't see how anyone beats them. The Sparks play against the Auckland Hearts on Thursday for the right, I guess, as Baldy would say, to lose to the Blaze in the final. But, you know, I think the only way that anything would change there is that Susie Bates pulls out something special in the final for the Sparks, because I do think that they will beat the Hearts, and then it's just a matter of her pulling out something special in that final.
I guess the only thing with T20 is someone can have a day out, and if they do, but particularly... a player of Bates's quality can actually take a game away in a relatively short space of time. So whoever does line up, I think, has got to go in with that mentality.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough. And I mean, you look down the Sparks lineup, they also have a lot of talented players. And you mentioned Bates. I mean, I mentioned Bates as well. You look at the top run score charts, she's 100 runs clear of everyone else, at this point. And yeah, she's, I mean, I guess that's the probably the real positive to come out of the Super Smash on the women's side is that all the White Ferns players, or the players we expect to be in the White Ferns, coming up leading up to this India series that starts on February 9 and then going into the Women's World Cup, they're all in form. You know, we saw Amy Satterthwaite last week scoring a 100 for Canterbury. We've seen, like just said, Susie Bates, Amelia Kerr, Jess Kerr, they're all bowling really well. And yeah, you know, I guess that at least gives us confidence that the best players, they are the best players in New Zealand, and we're going to be able to, they're going in with some form and hopefully some confidence. And I think we said last week that that India series is going to be a real test to see where New Zealand is at going into that Women's World Cup, which I guess sadly is likely to have no fans, which is probably another thing that we'll end up talking about it as we go on here.
So let's move across to the men's competition. I know we want to talk a few talking points around the game, and we can lead into some sort of international conjecture there as well, with Devon Conway missing out on the ICC Men's Test Team of the Year and any gong really or award or mention in that as well. So yeah, what have you got for us domestically on the men's front, Lippy?
Yeah, so look, I guess from the men's side, we actually saw, we played a really important part in Tim Seifert's return to form.
Oh, yeah, we did.
Last week, that which was brilliant. The commentator's curse working in reverse, which was really nice to see. You know, we detailed his struggles and then suddenly, straight away, went out and scored a match-winning 88 that put the Northern Brave into the first place and straight into that final. So they'll be the ones contesting that final on Saturday. And then on the other side, we've got Wellington Firebirds and forgetting all these names, but Wellington and Canterbury playing Kings. In Canterbury Kings playing
is
in
the Northern Brave. I thought they were the Knights.
Yeah, they changed now. It's Northern Brave. It's that's what I mean. You can't keep up.
Are the Brave.
Right. Yeah. I got a pair of shorts with the Knights on, so they're out of date.
Out of date. Yeah, exactly. So, look, I actually think it's a much more even competition. I mean, if you look at the Brave, in terms of their full run of the year, you'd certainly say on paper and the tournament that they had that they go in deserving winners probably of this tournament. But I actually think there's just so many variables in this side, no matter who makes it through to the final to play against the Brave. With adding all these New Zealand players back, you know, if you look at Wellington now, you look at that lineup and it's Conway, it's Finn Allen, there's Michael Bracewell, who's in great form and, you know, someone who's not necessarily recognised on those international stages, but, you know, you've got Blundell, Ravindra. Yeah, their top order now looks incredibly explosive and, you know, you wouldn't back against Devon Conway in a big game to win you a game. So, look, I think that one's much more up in the air. Canterbury as well, you look at the likes of Tom Latham, who's come back and just scored a nice 50 for them. But then ND, there's De Gronholm, there's Southey and Bolt and Santner are all back. So I guess that's the one positive right out of this tournament being, or this tour to Australia being cancelled, is that we get to see, you know, this marquee tournament, which it is in New Zealand. It's the one that's being publicised, it's being shown on free-to-air TV. We're going to get to see all those New Zealand players play in the final, whether that's on the White Ferns side or the Black Caps side. So, look, if you had to tip, get me to tip a winner in the men's, I think I would go for Wellington. You know, they've obviously got to get past Canterbury first, but yeah, like I said, I just think it's the Conway factor. You know, we're very big fans of Conway here on this podcast. I mean, I just think that in a big game, someone like him, he comes off. Finn Allen just smashed it the other day. Those guys come off and it's a very tough ask for ND.
And I guess for those of you around the world who may not have picked up on the news, New Zealand back into the red traffic light system, which means gatherings of over 100, sorry, not allowed, which obviously applies to sporting contests. So by the looks of it, the rest of the summer played behind closed doors, although the messaging seems to be that the cricket will continue, albeit without fans in the stadium.
Yeah, that's what I've seen, and it looks like, well, certainly for the Super Smash, we're going to have no fans for these finals, which is obviously a real shame. At least the positive there is that it's on free-to-air TV, or you know that it's very accessible for people to watch. The word with the Women's World Cup, and a thing that I've seen a couple of times this week, and Grant Robertson, who's the sports minister here in New Zealand, has mentioned, he's talked about the idea of pods and whether you could at stadiums have pods of 100 people if they can enter through, you know, different exits and entry points, and that they've trialled that in Super Smash games and it has worked to some degree. You know, who knows? The government has certainly shown that they're not especially willing to make exceptions for sport in New Zealand, but it would be a massive shame if this tournament goes ahead without fans, because, you know, it's a marquee tournament for New Zealand. I think especially the kids, you know, it's such a shame for the kids to not be able to go and watch the women's game, because it's a game that's growing immensely, and you know, you see so many now. When we talked to Katie Martin, she talked about how there's kids that are saying, you know, they want to be Sophie Devine now, and that they want to be women's players, and it's not when Katie Martin was growing up, or the only people that they saw were men's players. So, yeah, massive shame if they don't get to go to the ground and see those players play.
Absolutely, hear, hear. Let's move back across the ditch. We are enacting our very own Trans-Tasman bubble here, hopping across the Tasman left, right and centre. But we've got the Women's Ashes, which, to be fair, has started with a bit of a hiss and a roar with the first T20 and then turned into a damp squib with a couple of games in that T20 leg of the multi-format Women's Ashes, lost to Rain in Adelaide. So potentially good for the winemakers, but not so much for the cricketers.
Mm. Yeah, not so much for the cricketers. Big win for Australia in that first T20 and then two games rained off, no results there. The test match, one-off test match starts 27th of January, which is Thursday, if I'm not mistaken.
Day after Australia Day.
So it's the Australia Day test match. It's a women's test, Australia versus England, the old foe. And it looks like Australia have named a pretty strong squad. Tanya Vlahmic has had a repeat of a stress fracture, so she's out. And it looks like Darcy Brown is in. Stella Campbell's also there. And Elise Perry's back into that test squad as well, having been omitted from that first T20. Much controversy caused when Elise Perry, who was hailed in some Murdoch press reports and the Fox Sports press as being the greatest cricketer of all time, being left out of the Australian side. And of course she was. She hasn't been tremendous. But I think Talia McGrath just destroyed England in that T20 and justified her selection. So look, there's lots to play for. And the series is now wide open with a couple of those results missing out, which means points still up for grabs.
And Mooney, is she likely to play the test match? Broke a jaw, had it operated on, and then the next day was in the nets having throwdowns.
Yeah, unbelievable. I mean, I've had that same jaw operation to put a plate in to fix a broken jaw, and you're still pretty tender for a few days afterwards. So credit to her for getting back into the nets and getting in against the dog thrower. Again, she's been named in the squad, but I imagine that the question will be down to her. Do you want to play? And if she says, yeah, I'm fit and ready to go, and she's a pretty tough cookie, I think she'll play even with a broken jaw. So full credit to her. That's not easy to do.
So we'll move again. We're racking up the air points on this episode of the Top Order podcast. Off to India, South Africa. Conclusion of the ODIs there. Thoughts, feelings, emotions, guys?
Well, India have gone another series loss. Have they won a cricket game in 2022? I don't think they've won an international game of men's cricket this year yet. Look, I think it's time to start the overreactions, time to start the inquests, the inquiries, the full review of Rahul Dravid's tenure. Of course, I'm being a little bit flippant here, but there will be many people calling for a deep and lengthy inquiry into the state of Indian cricket, because in that South African tour, they've really underperformed. I think South Africa, to be fair, have overachieved a little bit and have shown that they're a much better side than a lot of people give them credit for, but a lot of that Indian side, particularly in the Test series, I think, have underperformed on that tour. What do you reckon, boys? Do we need to overreact to this 3-0 result and 2-0 in the Test series?
No, I don't think
2-1.
So.
2-1. Give them a little bit of credit.
Oh, 2-1. Fair enough. So they won a Test before Christmas and then lost.
They won the Boxing Day Test. Yeah, yes.
Fair enough.
No, I don't think we need to overreact. I think Indian cricket is moving into a new era with Rahul Dravid at the helm in terms of coaching. You've got different captaincy across all three formats, and you've got a little bit of maybe underlying aggression or angst there within those sort of leadership ranks. But I think it will settle down. They've got a really, probably rude to say, easy summer coming up, but maybe one of the easier summers that they've had over the past few years with the West Indies and Sri Lanka in their home season coming up. So, yeah, I think that we should hold the overreactions until after that that home season that they've got there. You've had Rohit Sharma out of the side. You've had Ravindra Jadeja out of the side. You've had a lot of key pieces that have been missing. And just on the captaincy stuff that we were talking about a couple of pods ago, it looks to me like Rohit Sharma may take over that Red Bull captaincy, making him a three-format captain.
Yeah, you. I think I mentioned that and got shouted down, so I'll take a little bit of credit for Rohit Sharma.
We'll have to bring it up next week. I think you said it's not very often there's a three-format captain, but...
Yeah, we'll maybe discuss it, but, you know, in light of the fact that we try and claim any prediction, at the end of the day, I did get my prediction of the Ashes being called off ratified last week, so right. I can probably go with a little bit of credit for actually having said that.
On the South African side, like you just mentioned it before, you know, very, very, we've got to start impressive. Thinking that, yeah, that they're doing a really good job here and that they're building, even despite some of the off-field stuff that is still going on in the boardroom and things there, which is, you know, not so good.
Which is really odd that Bouch is still in charge of the team during this. Yeah, look, I'm sure that's all going to come out in the wash, but wow, that's a strange set of circumstances. Normally, in any other... you know, business environment, you're charged with gross misconduct. You're stood down on full pay as a very minimum. You certainly don't continue at the helm. But yeah, really strange to see what's going on.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think we'll see in a few weeks, right? What's going to happen? And, you know, who knows? Hopefully it doesn't disrupt what's going on here, because they must, you know, soon be thinking about leaving to New Zealand. And I'm, you know, I guess it's just made me really excited for this series, and it made me a little bit disappointed that we're not playing like a full stack series against them with three tests and three ODIs and some T20s as well.
What I find interesting is that a lot of that team, well, that team's the same team that's actually been underperforming over the last, 18 months or so, but these guys have started to stand up. You know, Van der Dussen, Bavuma as well, I think he deserves a massive pat on the back, taking on leadership responsibilities and scored some really good runs. And Quinton de Kock coming back into the white ball format and playing really well. So there is growth there, which is exciting to see, because we know they've got the bowling attack to match any team in the world. Now they're starting to put some runs on the board.
And the thing that impressed me about their bowling attacker was that it's been some of their spin bowlers who've been successful against India, outpointed, I think, some more fancied spin opponents on that Indian side. And traditionally, Raj, it's been the pace bowlers that have been doing the job for South Africa. But in this particular instance, particularly, I think, in the second ODI, their spin bowlers really led them to victory. And I think the difference between the two sides at the end of the day has been that South Africa's bowlers have outpointed India's bowlers throughout the series and have been able to bowl India out for low scores, and South Africa's batters have been able to get on top of that much vaunted Indian bowling attack that we expected, at least in the tests, to be a real force because they were so successful in Australian conditions 2 years before. So massive credit has to go to South Africa, and it's, I think things are just, we just need to keep an eye on that Indian situation and see how they bounce back in their home conditions.
Yeah, I think the other factor is that, you know, South Africa at home, and, you know, we often talk about how difficult it is to win away in any format. And South Africa's problems off the field have been well documented. But as we've talked about, that they've got a decent crop of players coming through. It seems as if guys are playing for the respective captains now. And they've got, you know, got a bit of a team ethos going within the playing 11s at least. And look, that's shown in their on-the-field results.
And I mean, a couple of players you just mentioned before, Raj, Van der Dussen. Were you guys aware that he averages 75 in ODI cricket? It's unbelievable. 30-odd games. I mean, you know, he's had 26 innings, 9 not out. Like, you know, there's, you would think that he's...
Small sample size.
It's a small sample size, but...
He's had a lot of red inkers. And even in this series, I think he had two. He's averaging over 200, I think.
Yeah,
32 games. So. That's a reasonable sample size.
Yeah. But look, you know, and Bavuma, I want to pick up on Bavuma and just fully agree with you, because I think, you know, we look at 12 months ago, you know, when we talked to Firdaus Moonda and we were saying, you know, who's going to be the captain of South Africa. And there was so much talk then about, you know, Bavuma is perhaps the natural person to fill that void, but can he even fill his spot in the side? But now he is putting up, I think they performed really well in that T20 World Cup. You know, yes, they didn't make it through to the playoffs, but they performed really well, despite all the off-field stuff again in that tournament. He's actually putting up winning performances. He's contributing performances that are leading to his side winning with the bat. So yeah, I think he deserves massive credit for someone who hasn't got it in the past for South Africa.
So just to round off the India South Africa series, there's a nice tweet there from Graham Smith to thanking the BCCI and Sourav Ganguly and your mate Jay Shah, Stu, for actually turning up. You know, it says here to the Indian players and management for the faith you showed in South Africa's cricket, ability to pull off a safe and successful tour. I think that's a bit of a stab there at the Australians and the English for leaving halfway through and the Australians not actually coming. What do you make of that? That this was a time where India were probably, I thought they were never going to go when we heard about this new variant coming out, but they went there and they showed that you can play cricket in a COVID environment, in a bubble environment, whether the players want to do it. I guess that's big props, I feel, for India for actually going. Yeah. And South Africa for actually pulling it off as well.
Yeah, look, I've probably got two things to say. So this is Graham Smith to Sourav Ganguly via Twitter. So it's just a clear case of cricket friend. but the second and more serious point that I'll make is I think it's pretty harsh if that was a PASAG comment around England. And look, I'm going to fight my corner here. We have played more test cricket in a COVID environment than any other nation. We've just played the only 5 test series to have been conducted during COVID times. Every other series has been a maximum of, I think, 4 tests. India, of course, leaving England a test early, and that's been rescheduled, I think, for next year. So, look, I think pretty harsh if that's a dig. I think that the situation has massively evolved from that England pulling out of a South Africa tour when we didn't really actually know a massive amount about COVID at that particular point, so you could understand that fear. We have obviously learned a little bit to live and cope with it a little bit better. But look, I guess it is, if it's in a genuine intent, that tweet, I think we've actually got to say, do you know what? He's dead right, because without that kind of commitment, we're not going to see sport played. So look, fantastic that they got the series on and got all of the series in as well.
We should probably do some more emails now and head to the West Indies.
Yeah, let's go Joburg. Joburg to Schiphol, Schiphol to London, London to Barbados, and then we can get off the plane and talk about the T20 series that's kicked off there. So, yeah, look, England disappointing in the first game. I don't know if you guys saw too much about it. You certainly gave me some shit on the Slack channel.
Certainly let you know about the scorecard. Quickly. Yeah,
it was quite quick.
Yeah, I wanted to watch it, but it was over reasonably quick. I couldn't get... couldn't get it on the coverage.
No, Jimmy Anderson, no Stuart Broad in the first game. That I have stolen that from a friend of the podcast, Bharat Sundaresan, but I saw that what are they doing, England, just not picking these guys in their first game of the series?
Yeah, look, absolutely. I think, unfortunately, they only had one business class seat available, and Sam Billings had already guaranteed it with his negotiations for flying out for the test series. So, unfortunately, Broadie and Jimmy still stuck at the airport, I think. In all seriousness, though, a disappointing performance in that first game. I think the wicket that they played on compared to the practice game where Jason Roy scored a big 100 and England got 200 against, albeit a Barbados Invitational 11, didn't actually stack up in that game. The wicket that they played on actually just held in the surface a little bit and probably didn't suit England's current T20 modus operandi of going out and giving it a massive biff in that first that first power play. When you're 4 down in the power play, it's difficult to come back from. Some late order hitting got England back in the game, but it obviously wasn't enough runs. But look, we saw, I guess, a return normal service resumed from the England team in the second game, albeit a little bit of a squeaky bum, only winning by a single run. When you actually look at it, the game was pretty much over going into that last over. Fantastic hitting. But yeah, it would have been another Ian Bishop, remember the name, sort of comment if they'd have got over the line in that final over.
The thing that really impressed me in that second game for West Indies, yes, they went down by a run and they were 60 for 6 or something like that in that chase of 170, 181, I think it was, from England, whatever it was, is that it's the young guys who've started to step up. So for West Indies, both Bravos, Pollard, Dre Russ, Gale, Ravi Rampal, all of these guys are in their late 30s and are in the back end of their careers or have recently retired. the lament was, who are the young players who are starting to step up for West Indies and going to show us the way forward? And Romario Shepherd and Akhil Hussain in that chase have shown us that they've got some metal not to roll over and die when the situation gets tough. So there's plenty to like about that second result for the West Indies in that they've got young players who are starting to step up and play meaningful contributions on the international stage.
Yeah, I also think it's interesting that they've been able to bring back some more experienced heads as well, like the likes of Shai Hope and, as you mentioned, Darren Bravo.
Yeah,
bringing them back into the squad after they've lost some of those seasoned campaigners. So it's good to be able to bring in seasoned international experience into the side, and it shows a little bit of depth there as well. Brandon King, I see you didn't mention as well, the opener, scored 50-odd, yep. Looked very good, got a duck in the second 2020, but he looked good opening the batting. So yes, the future looks bright for West Indies cricket.
Yeah, I think the final thing I'll add from an England perspective is this is really a, if not a second string side, it's certainly a one and a half string side. We've got the likes of Johnny Bairstow, Joss Butler, Jofra Archer, Liam Livingstone, all missing from that lineup as well. So chances for people like Rhys Topley, Saqib Mahmood coming in. And interestingly as well, England picking, I think, four left-arm seamers in this squad. And so far, Tymal Mills got a go in the first game. Rhys Topley's got a go. David Payne from Gloucestershire is the other guy that hasn't had a crack yet. And George Garton, who's played a little bit of Big Bash cricket as well. Mm. So interesting that they may be playing around with what that looks like as an option. And look, maybe we might see two of them in the same dig. It's normally that left arm is the point of difference. Why not have your right armour as the point of difference and play three left-arm seamers?
What do you make, if I can put you on blast here, Binksy, of the as you would say, the tapage that the likes of Chris Jordan has been getting in the World Cup? He got a similar sort of beating in a couple of the games towards the end of the tournament there. Is it a bit of a worry to you?
Yeah, look, it's certainly a worry when your death bowler's going for 13 and over. Never normally a good sign as teams take the game deep and look to chase, 12, 13 and over. That's now bizarrely comfortable if you're doing that in the last four or five overs of a game with wickets in hand. Interestingly, they spoke to Owen Morgan after the game and, I can't remember who it was. It might have been Steve Harmison. It was certainly an old former pro who just said, "Why aren't you bowling Yorkers?" And Owen Morgan said, "We were trying and we missed," rather than actually saying, the plans were different. Actually admitted that it was actually execution of skill that was letting England down. And I guess that will be a worry. But I think the good thing is, really, there's not a massive amount on these games as we lead into that T20 World Cup. So the fact that Saqib Mahmood has had an opportunity to bowl a last over where he's got taken for 30, hopefully has learnt something from that. The same with the likes of Jordan and other guys that will no doubt get a go throughout the rest of the series.
And getting bashed up in the West Indies is a good form bellwether indicator for success in the next World Cup, because that happened to Australia in their preparation for the last World Cup. They got their B-side got belted by the West Indies and then they went on to win the tournament. So you're looking good from that point of view.
Their B-side got belted everywhere.
Yeah, they did. Australia. Yeah, they did.
You would have liked the spin bowling that came out from Moeen Ali and Adil Rashid. They're looking quite promising. What I wanted to ask actually is, a guy like Muhammad Ali.
he was pretty good. He was good, yeah.
A guy like Moeen Ali, how much longer do you think he actually has? Because if he's only playing sort of these formats for England, he could go on for a while.
Yeah, look, what I've seen, and look, this is there's a couple of components to this. He's done a bit of punditry work on the Ashes where he's actually had a little bit of a spar with Alistair Cook, Sir Alistair Cook, across the BT Sports couch. So really come out of his shell a little bit in terms of some of his views on the game. And I think has actually said as well that, the fact that he's now only playing one format has sort of mentally actually really, really freed him up. And I think, look, if I'm being brutally honest, a lot of that is going to be down to Owen Morgan's captaincy. You look at both Moeen Ali and Rashid, who you've just mentioned, both of whom have played, enough test cricket to have had a reasonable go at it. They really seem to want to play for Owen Morgan. He really trusts them. He understands them. He knows when and how to bowl them. Rashid himself, you know, has been asked to do things like open the bowling with a new ball in the power play. And he's talked about how Morgan sort of actually come and put his arm around his shoulder and talked to him about it, and how he's convinced him that that's, you know, an idea that that's then actually worked. So look, I think to answer your question, yes, I can see a blueprint here where Owen Morgan, if his back holds up, will want to play this T20 World Cup, and he might even want to go on and play that 2023 white ball 50-over tournament as well. And look, I wouldn't be surprised if he's trying to talk the likes of Adil Rashid, who only plays white ball cricket, and Naimo and Ali into having that little run with him, because they, you know, could prove the difference in those middle overs.
Well, that just about exhausts our Round the World ticket on this week's episode of the Top Order podcast. We'll be back in your feed pretty soon, actually, with the next episode of the Hall of Fame. 60 to 56, a few controversial picks in there from Baldy that I'm sure will get shouted down over the next wee while. But we look forward to your company then. In the meantime, take care of yourselves, look after each other, and we'll see you soon on the next episode of the Top Order podcast.
Social Podcast Network.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.